Well, one reason you might hurry to an ER this summer is, well, after a great ramble in your backyard or the woods, you find a tiny little black tick somewhere on your body. Once the scourge of the Cape, the deer tick, and the Lyme disease it carries is spreading rapidly across Massachusetts. In the year 2000, there were just 1,200 Lyme disease cases diagnosed in the state. But last year, the number jumped to over 4,000. So what's going on here? Joining us to talk about the spread of Lyme disease in the Bay State is Dr. Sam Telford. He's a professor of epidemiology at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University, and he specializes in tick-borne illnesses. Dr. Telford, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you.
And also with us is Dr. Al DiMaria. He's the state epidemiologist for the State Department of Public Health. Dr. DiMaria, welcome to Radio Boston as well.
Hi, Megan.
So, Dr. Telford, let me just ask you to start us off by helping us describe what do you think the reason is where we're seeing this huge burst in Lyme disease cases in the state?
There are three factors. The first and most important is the burgeoning deer population. Deer numbers have increased, and hunting itself as a sport seems to be on the decline. Not only that, it's becoming much harder to hunt because every new house that goes up takes 18 acres of huntable land away because you cannot discharge a firearm legally without written permission within 500 feet of an inhabited house. So it's become a lot harder to control the deer population. Second is that people are using the habitat a lot more. They're putting their houses right up into the woods. They're going out for walks in the woods more often. And the third is, I think, the awareness and reporting of Lyme disease has increased over the years.
So our love affair with nature and wanting to have it be part of our lives, even in suburban or urban environments, is part of this problem. I want to actually get to that in a little bit. But let's take a step back and remind everyone, including ourselves, the impact of Lyme disease in life, because we've got a cut here from Framingham resident Sheila Statlander. She has Lyme disease, and so do all three of her children. They contracted it while they were growing up. And she describes here what happened to one of her sons.
That sort of morphed into migraine headaches. We started to notice that his handwriting was affected. He had trouble concentrating in school. He ran fevers, and he was nauseous a lot of the time. He developed sleeping problems, sleep disturbance, and sort of painful joints, and the pain would migrate.
So, Dr. DiMaria, remind us exactly what is it, what Lyme disease specifically is, and why it causes this debilitating pain in the body.
Well, Lyme disease is a bacterial infection, and the bacteria really invade many different organs in the body. And the most obvious manifestation is a skin lesion, the so-called bullseye rash, which occurs in most people with Lyme disease, but not everyone. The rash can be different, and people can have Lyme disease without the rash. But the bacteria can also invade the nervous system, the heart, basically all of the vital systems of the body, and cause a small but significant amount of damage that can really be disabling. People can get Bell's palsy, paralysis for their face, and get arthritis when it invades the joints. In fact, that's how it was first recognized and described in the mid-1970s in the United States. And so it can have a significant impact on people.
Well, if you are one of those people that Lyme disease has had an impact on, if you notice that you and your friends are maybe a little more wary of going out into the woods, even in your own backyard these days, give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, because we are talking about the rampant and surprising spread of Lyme disease in new places in Massachusetts and not just on the Cape. Once again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Telford, so the life cycle of the tick that carries Lyme disease, it relies on the deer, as you describe it. Tell us a little bit more about why it is that the two are so closely related.
Well, it's actually a very complicated life cycle. You need two elements. You need a source of infection. The ticks themselves are born uninfected. And it's small animals, field mice, white-footed mice, small birds, shrews, that carry the bacteria because they are the most frequently bitten by ticks. But you need a source of the ticks. And 90% of all of the female ticks, which are the reproductive stage of the tick, feed on deer. Each tick that feeds successfully on a deer will lay 2,000 eggs. And so what we have here is an interplay between large numbers of mice serving as a blood meal for the immature stages, the larvae and the nymphs, or the baby and teenagers, as it were. And then once they take those blood meals, they grow to the adult stage. And the adult stage is looking around for something much larger, like a dog or a deer. In the woods around here, the thing that's most common at that in terms of that size is a deer. And so where you see deer, you'll see deer ticks. And the number of deer that you have is directly proportional to the number of ticks that you'll see.
Dr. DeMaria, is there a way to interrupt that cycle between the mouse, the deer, and the deer tick that doesn't involve the deer?
Well, you know, I think the most important thing is the personal protective measures that people can take, and that is to avoid the ticks in the first place. And if you can't avoid areas where there are ticks, to use repellents. And probably most important in terms of preventing Lyme disease is the tick check, to check at the end of the day if you were in the area where there are ticks, to make sure you remove the ticks appropriately before they can transmit the infection, because the bacteria in the tick are really dormant. They have to be, or otherwise, you know, the year between the ticks taking blood meals, the ticks would explode with bacteria if they continued to divide in the ticks. So the bacteria really have to come back, wake up in the tick, be transmitted to the tick's salivary glands, get into the saliva to be transmitted. So that tick check at the end of the day, which a lot of parents tell me they now do on their children, almost every day, is a very important way to prevent infection.
It's such a part of the Massachusetts summer ritual now.
Wasn't true. You know, 20 years ago, you didn't hear people doing this all over the state.
I mean, even when I take a walk in our local park, sometimes I come back and I just feel the heebie-jeebies all over me, and I ask my husband to be sure that I'm not covered in little tiny black dots. But let's get some calls in here from listeners. Shira's calling from Newton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Shira.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to ask what the relationship is, if any, between Lyme disease and ALS. I understand that there has been research done to establish a relationship between the two, but I was wondering whether your guests know anything about that.
Shira, thanks so much for your call. Dr. DeMaria, your response to that.
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's any documented relationship. And, you know, ALS has been around a lot longer than the increased prevalence of Lyme disease in North America. So we know that Lyme disease was around 100 years ago, but it wasn't being transmitted because we didn't have the right circumstances that Dr. Telford described. But I am unaware of any credible relationship between Lyme disease and ALS.
Mm. I want to bring in another voice into this conversation. He's Dr. Rob Deblinger. He's assistant director at Massachusetts Wildlife. It's the state agency that oversees animal protection and control, and he studies the state's deer population. Dr. Deblinger, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon.
Well, we heard Dr. Telford tell us a little bit earlier that it's really the deer and the spread of the deer that are the culprit in the new places we see Lyme disease popping up. So why is it, first of all, give us a sense as to how many deer and where they are in the state of Massachusetts right now.
Well, we have deer throughout Massachusetts, including Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket. And certainly there are higher densities of deer in eastern Massachusetts compared to western Massachusetts, and sort of moderate densities in the central part of the state. And those will range anywhere from 10 deer per square mile up to 70 deer per square mile. The highest density is on Nantucket right now.
Is there any threshold density that we need to start seeing these increased incidences of Lyme disease amongst human beings?
Well, thanks to Dr. Telford's research, we know that certainly the lower density, the better, and somewhere below 10 deer per square mile, we know that's a good number to have the lower instances of Lyme disease, and so we strive to manage deer at those densities, less than 10 deer per square mile, and that's our goal. That's not possible in all of Massachusetts for the reasons that Dr. Telford talked about. Suburbia is a difficult place to manage deer because we manage deer through hunting, and it's difficult to get hunters close to the deer because of the houses.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry to interrupt there, Dr. Deblinger, but I read that those suburban housing developments with their planted gardens, their ornamental shrubs, the woodlots, even the small farms that we love here in Massachusetts, all of that has actually provided a mix of habitat that is so well suited to the deer. We've got more deer that feel securer than they even did in pre-colonial Massachusetts.
Well, that's true. They're very, very adaptable species. And while you might not see them on your front lawn during the day, they're there at night. And so they'll be in the state forest or the town forest in cover during the day. And we call them crepuscular. They're active at dawn and dusk. And so those are their peak activity, but they'll be active any time of day, and they'll be active at night. And so you might, I know people, and so do you, that have planted very expensive shrubbery around their house just to find that at night they're eaten by deer.
Let's get another call in here. Drew's calling from Newton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Drew.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
Well, I just want to say I had Lyme disease about 4 or 5 summers ago, and I was in excruciating pain, and I was actually being treated by a chiropractor. And I was on autoimmune drugs at the time, medication, there was no manifestation of the symptoms initially, so I don't know, it took about 2 or 3 weeks till suddenly I had that target rash on my leg, and at that point I was whisked to the hospital where I had CAT scans and spinal taps and everything, and I ended up being on a PICC line in my arm for about a month taking the antibiotics.
Wow. Drew, do you know like where you were when you picked up the tick? Do you have a sense, were you just at home in Newton or were you elsewhere?
No, I think I was in the vineyard at the time. We were in Menemphis.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that's where I picked it up, unfortunately.
Oh, and are you free of the Lyme disease now?
I am free of the Lyme disease, and you know, thank God they caught it enough time. But I did hear about the potential for really debilitating symptoms.
All right.
So that was great.
Drew, I'm so glad to hear that you are relieved of the disease, and I'm sorry you had to suffer for it, but thank you so much for your call. Let's get another one in here. Ruth is calling from AIR. Welcome to Radio Boston, Ruth.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. What's your thought today?
Well, I have a small goat farm, and my question was to the tick expert if Lyme ticks can use goats as a host instead of deer or including deer.
Ruth, let's throw that to our tick expert, Dr. Sam Telford from Tufts University. What's your thought on that?
Yes, they certainly will feed on goats. They'll feed on any ruminant, but generally where you keep goats, the nice closely cropped grass, which is the result of the goats feeding, is not very nice for the ticks. They don't like not being able to hide. And so generally people who keep goats or sheep or cattle don't have much of a problem with ticks, but yes, they certainly will feed on them.
Mm. Dr. Deblinger from Mass Wildlife, let me ask you, I mean, the key here, it sounds like, other than what Dr. DeMaria said, which is self-protection against ticks, is deer control. So what is the state planning on doing or thinking about doing in order to control these burgeoning deer populations?
Well, we have a program where we work very closely with towns to try to open up conservation lands for hunting, and it may not include gun hunting. It may be bow hunting. That's been very effective in suburban areas. And we also work with private landowners. And so the key is access for the hunters. Not as much, we have plenty of hunters. That's not the issue. It's getting them access to the deer. And so towns that are completely closed to hunting, that's a problem. And so we work with the townspeople as well as private homeowners, farmers, to try to sort of marry the hunters with those lands.
And let's get a call exactly on this point. Justine's calling from Dover. Welcome to Radio Boston, Justine.
Yes, hello. I'm a long, I think for 30 years I've been listening to WBUR. This is the first time I've ever called you. BUR should know, and I think most people who live in the western suburbs know that we actually have a huge problem with deer. Our Board of Health in Dover, Mass, for the first time this fall, is going to be having an experimental deer hunt on conservation land because there have been so many cases of Lyme disease in our town. Now, one thing to put this in context, the Board of Health is very, and I'm chairman of the Open Space Committee. I'm not on the Board of Health. I tried to get the Board of Health person to talk, but she must be on vacation. Anyway, the point of that I'm getting at to put this in context is I've lived in this town for over 30 years. Until the last 10 years, there was no deer problem. I never saw deer. So it's only been fairly recently, I suppose, because of the habitat has been reduced because of, you know, building and construction and that kind of thing. Also, as you pointed out, I was listening to your show earlier, there is a lot of landscaping that mm-hmm. is put on, you know, that people, you know, eat, including yew bushes, which are like gravy for the deer. They love it, that kind of thing.
Justine, it breaks my heart that you've waited 30 years to call us here at WBUR, and I've got to cut you off. So don't wait 30 more years. Call us again at Radio Boston. Thank you so much for that call. I just want to get a response to what you said from our guest today. Dr. Sam Telford, we've just got a couple seconds left. I mean, do you think it is possible with programs like Justine said to control the deer population? Or are we beyond a certain threshold where Lyme disease is going to be a fact of life everywhere in Massachusetts?
We started talking about the problems that the 128-495 corridor would have 10 years ago and to try to do something proactive. And now is the time for programs such as Justine's to happen in all communities around here to try to reduce the population so that our grandchildren will find Massachusetts a better place.
That's Dr. Sam Telford. He's professor of epidemiology at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University. Dr. Telford, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And Dr. Al DiMaria, state epidemiologist for the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, thank you as well for taking the time to be here today.
You're welcome.
And Dr. Rob Deblinger, assistant director at Mass Wildlife. Keep us safe out there from those dreadful, dreadful Bambies, but thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, up next,
Ali, 1967 to 1985, our beautiful feline child, she gave her love completely and taught us truths sublime, Hank and Irene.
We visit one of the oldest pet cemeteries in the nation. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.